Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care. And we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
A tragedy that took place a few days ago on the other side of the ocean, that being the terrorist attack that took place in Moscow at a concert hall. Now, what's being reported here is that this was a situation where the group ISIS-K is responsible for this. The Russian government says they have all four of the shooters in custody. The number that I've seen has about 140 innocent people being killed, possibly as many as 150 others injured. Some others are saying are not accepting that that authorship of ISIS-K as being responsible here. And some have pointed to the war with Ukraine here. And a lot of folks wondering what this means for the future of U.S.-Russian relations. The man that knows more about Russia than anyone that we've spoken to on this program, at least as it relates to interacting with the United States, is George Beebe. These days, he is the director of grand strategy at the Quincy Institute for Responsible Statecraft. He's been a diplomat. He's worked in and out of the government. And he's also the author of a terrific book called The Russia Trap, How Our Shadow War with Russia Could Spiral into Catastrophe. And unfortunately, a lot of the things that George wrote about in that book have proven prophetic. George, thanks so much for joining me so early in the morning.
Thanks, Frank.
George, let's talk about what we know as it relates to this terrorist attack at the concert hall on Friday. What do we know for a fact? What's indisputable?
Well, I think both sides, both the Russians and the U.S., acknowledged that the United States passed a warning to Russia through official intelligence channels some time ago. We had information indicating that some sort of a terrorist attack was likely and that the targets were perhaps a concert hall in Moscow or other public venues. And the Russians acknowledged that we, in fact, passed that warning. Putin has also, in his most recent statement, acknowledged that the perpetrators were what he called Islamists. What is at a question right now is whether it was only ISIS and these Islamists that were involved, or, as Putin has suggested might be the case, Iraq may have been the mastermind behind all of this and has used ISIS or these Islamists as a cutout to mask its involvement. The United States is strongly denying that that is the case. The U.S. issued a public statement almost immediately after the attack on the concert, saying that we were quite confident that Ukraine was not involved and that this, in fact, was ISIS that we had been monitoring through our intelligence for quite some time on this.
Given the nature of the current U.S.-Russian relationship, where we're basically engaged in this proxy war in Ukraine, and I would venture to say that the relationship between these two countries, the two greatest nuclear powers on the face of the earth, is as bad as it's been since the Berlin Wall collapse. Given the nature of the tensions between those two countries, how would Russia have reacted to a warning from the United States about a forthcoming terrorist attack?
Well, you know, I think you're right. The way the Russians are reacting to this is an indication of just how bad the U.S.-Russian relationship has become and just how precarious things are right now. It wasn't very many years ago that we, in fact, passed a similar warning to Russia about a potential terrorist attack in St. Petersburg. I think this might have been in 2018 or 2019. And the Russians took action and thwarted that plot and prevented the terrorists from following through. And the Russians actually expressed public gratitude afterwards for the U.S. warning. So a lot has changed since then. And I think what we're seeing right now is a situation where the two sides were unable, essentially, to manage what should have been a fairly straightforward thing. The United States passed this warning along as part of our longstanding duty to warn policy. The Russians have done the same thing with us several times. But the Russians this time were deeply suspicious that there was something else going on, that the United States was in fact trying to cover up a Ukrainian plot against Russia. And if we're not able to handle a matter like this, how can we be confident that the U.S. and Russia could manage some sort of unintended clash over Ukraine and prevent that from escalating into direct combat? I think this is a very worrisome development.
But just to be clear, though, that while Vladimir Putin is blaming Islamists for the attack, he's also kind of throwing some shade towards Ukraine. Based on what you're seeing, it doesn't appear that Ukraine was involved in this terrorist attack at all.
It doesn't, not at this point. No evidence has emerged that links Ukraine to this attack. I think the most one can say is that Putin has alleged the perpetrators were trying to escape across the Ukrainian border, where he said Ukraine had prepared a window for their escape. Now, whether that's true or not, we don't know. Not even clear that Putin sincerely believes that this is true. But there is no question that Russia's intelligence services are going to be looking very hard for evidence linking these perpetrators to Ukraine in some way. And if they find things that they find convincing, then that's going to bode very ill for relations, not just between Russia and Ukraine, which are obviously in a state of war, but also between Russia and the United States, because they're going to be very suspicious that the United States was involved in some way.
So going forward, obviously, it sounds like it's a very bleak picture, meaning the relationship between the United States and Russia. But given the realities of the ongoing situation in Ukraine, what can be done from an American perspective to not exacerbate things further?
Well, given how much mistrust there is in the relationship, we've really got our work cut out for us on this. The Russians are deeply suspicious. Their instinct is not to believe us. But I think one of the things the White House can do is express condolences. The White House press spokesman has issued a statement expressing sympathy for the victims in all of this. But we've been much more concerned about denying Ukrainian involvement than we have been in expressing condolences for the victims of this tragedy. And that's something that I think might chip away at Russia's suspicions. President Biden himself has not said anything publicly about this, and that's something I think the United States might want to consider. The other thing is that through intelligence channels, we could be forthcoming about what we know. It's not clear how much detail we've provided to the Russians about this particular plot. There's always a balance one has to strike between exposing intelligence sources and methods and conveying enough information to allow another side to act on warning. And I just don't know. No one out in the public domain can know exactly what has been provided to the Russians on this. But this is a situation where providing some more detail might help to ease some of Russia's suspicions on all of this. So those are the kinds of things we ought to be thinking about.
With everything you have on your plate, earning your degree online seems impossible. But at Grand Canyon University, we specialize in helping you fit a master's degree in education into your busy day. Your graduation team, led by your own GCU counselor, provides you with the personal support you need to succeed. Achieve your goals with a plan and team behind you. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Visit gcu.edu.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
I'm not sure if you were working in the government at the time. I think you might have been. But a lot of us remember the story of the Tsarnaev brothers, the brothers that were responsible for the Boston Marathon bombing. And it was reported that Russia had given the United States government a warning about these young men and their extremist tendencies and affiliations. Obviously, these young men were still in a position where they were able to carry out the Boston Marathon bombing. Does something like that happen, George, because we're not taking a Russian warning seriously? Does something like that happen because of bureaucratic incompetence? Or does a warning get ignored from not just Russia, but any other country for some other reason?
Well, bureaucrats are always an issue in this sort of thing. And yes, what you're describing did in fact happen. The Russians did provide some warning through intelligence channels about the Tsarnaevs and their radicalization, their associates back in Russia. I think the United States did take some steps at that time to investigate. The question was, how thorough was that investigation? Was follow-through sufficient on the American side? And that has been a point of controversy in retrospect after that attack on the Boston Marathon. So very rarely does any state simply ignore a warning, and that wasn't the case here with Russia regarding this concert attack. Putin, after the American warning, did speak derisively about American intentions. He did suggest that this might be a provocation. But he also announced in tandem with that, that he was putting Russia's security services on heightened alert as a result of that warning. So although the Russians were suspicious.
I'm sorry to interrupt, George, but just to be clear from my perspective, that announcement of heightened security, that announcement took place before the actual attack?
Yes, that's right.
Interesting. Okay.
So it wasn't that the Russians ignored the American warning. Were they skeptical of it? Were they questioning of our motives? Absolutely. Did they ignore it? I think the answer to that is no, at least if Putin's public statements are any indication.
The war in Ukraine, which obviously we've spent some time talking about over the course of the last 2 years, there's a whole battle over the level of American aid to Ukraine and what it should be and how it should come. What are you hearing and seeing about how the war itself is going? It's been a frustrating thing for those of us that just want to know what's happening to get accurate information about this, because it seems like both sides have a vested interest in doing some spinning. How do you see the war going?
Well, you're right. There's an information war that's going on in parallel to the actual fighting on the battlefield. So it does make getting accurate information very difficult. What I think is happening right now is that the Russians have been wearing down, exhausting Ukraine's ability to continue fighting over time. The Russians have looked at the situation and said they're not likely to defeat American technology and American intelligence, which have been critical to Ukraine's fortunes on the battlefield, through some sort of lightning maneuver that breaks through Ukrainian forces and encircles them. Rather, they've decided, just like the North in the American Civil War fighting against the superior generalship of the South, the key to victory is just attrition, using Russia's larger population, its superior military manufacturing capabilities, and its ability to outlast the Ukrainians as the key to success. And right now that seems to be working. The Russians are not breaking through in a dramatic way against Ukraine, but they are steadily reducing the number of Ukrainians that can actually fight. They're exhausting Ukraine's supplies of artillery shells and air defense missiles, and they're doing so more rapidly than the United States and Europe can replace them. So the longer this war goes on, the worse things look for Ukraine. And the Ukrainians are now resorting to other methods to try to change Russia's approach. They're doing things like strikes against Russian naval forces in the Black Sea, trying to take the battle onto Russian Federation territory proper through longer-range drone strikes and things like that. And that's one of the reasons why the Russians are suspicious that the Ukrainians might have been behind this attack. It's consistent with other approaches that they've taken to try to inflict pain on Russians inside the Russian Federation itself.
You know, just going back to the terrorist attack in the concert hall, assuming ISIS-K is responsible for it, some folks may be wondering, because I realize this is sort of a naive thing for someone as experienced in foreign policy as you, but a lot of Americans who don't study foreign policy closely, they keep an ear open for the news, and they've come to view, largely because of the government portrayal and the media portrayal, they've come to view Putin as the bad guy, and they've also come to view ISIS as the bad guy. And a lot of folks may not immediately understand why ISIS, in this case, bad guy A, would be brutally attacking bad guy B. Explain to folks what the relationship is like between the Russian government and Islamic terrorism these days. Why would ISIS want to carry out a terrorist attack like this on Russia?
Well, ISIS has long identified Russia as one of its primary adversaries, just as it regards the United States as one of its primary adversaries. The Russians have been in Syria, for example, backing the Assad regime's efforts to suppress ISIS, which had a prominent foothold in Syria for many years, and continues to some degree to have operations ongoing there. And this organization, ISIS-K, that's focused on Afghanistan, Iran, and Central Asia, is primarily a Sunni Muslim radical organization that regards Russia as an obstacle to its goal of establishing a caliphate in that part of the world. And Russian relations with Iran have actually improved since Russia's invasion of Ukraine. Iran has been helping quite extensively Russia with drone strikes, drone manufacturers for the war. Iran is one of ISIS-K's foremost enemies as well. So not only do they regard Russia as a direct hostile country, it's also increasingly partnered with prominent ISIS-K enemies.
George Beebe, I always really enjoy our conversations, even if they so often happen when there are sad things happening in the world. Thank you for getting up early, and thank you for spending the time.
My pleasure, Frank.
George Beebe, you could check him out at the Quincy Institute for Responsible Statecraft.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.